Hello and welcome once again to the Power Play Point podcast. I am once again the blue liner on point. This is a Washington Capitals podcast, and I am once again proud to be a Washington Capitals fan. Will not mind saying that. That'll be kind of a here today. I'll just come out and say it. I think we all know what happened at the end of what seemed like a very long weekend. But just a quick bit of administration to pass along before we get going here. We are live to tape at the moment. It is Tuesday afternoon, April the 25th, in the year 2017. I am reaching out to any and all following me who have followed me either on Facebook at the Rumpled Red Hat, my namesake, or Twitter at BlueLiner98. Or you can send a query to my email, glhallowed@yahoo.com. I am live to tape for the duration of the show. You have anything you want me to put out there over the course of the next 30 to 45 minutes or so, do please send me a line at one of those outlets. So, well, we got to the conclusion that we wanted. I don't think it ended. I don't think that the journey was quite what anyone had planned, and that's more than a little obvious, but the end result was there just the same. But before we get into the Caps, I'm just going to give a very, very quick rundown of the other seven series. Let's go over to the West. Ducks, Flames. Flames got swept by the Ducks. I just have one comment about that. I think Dougie Hamilton has proved that he's pretty far from an elite defenseman, and anybody who thinks otherwise should go dunk their head in a trash can and see what they can come up with. That's all I'll say about that. So the next series, let's see. Oilers Sharks, also in the Pacific. Oilers acquitted themselves quite well. Won the series 4-2. I don't know if Jumbo Joe jumping into the series would have helped much the way the Oilers were playing. The fact that they came back from being blown out in a 7-0 loss speaks volumes. And while I don't know, I wouldn't pick this team to go to the Cup Final. They're going to be a very tough out for whoever ends up playing them if they get further from the next round, and we'll get to that in a second here. Well, actually, you know what? They are playing the Ducks since they're in the now that I think about it, since they're both in the Pacific. So, but I think the Ducks will come out on top, but it won't be an easy series. Let's see, the other two, St. Louis, Minnesota. Minnesota just looked lost in the series, and of course the Bruce Boudreau curse continues. I don't know. I don't know what it is about Boudreau, but it wasn't just that. I think St. Louis was clearly the better team by enough. Jake Allen has gotten over whatever funk he was in the middle of the year. So, hot goalie syndrome for whoever has to play him, which will be the surprise team of the first round by far, which would be the Nashville Predators, who knocked out the Chicago Blackhawks in a sweep. I don't think anybody saw that coming. I seriously doubt anybody saw that coming. I kind of feel bad for that team, because I think they thought they were just going to be able to turn it on, and unfortunately they just couldn't for whatever reason. And it just, I don't know. I don't have an explanation. I didn't get to see as much of that series as I would have liked, and they just, I don't know, they just did not have an answer. They just didn't seem to have an answer, and now there's talk of breaking up the team as far as possibly getting rid of a big name. They've already fired an assistant coach, so you kind of wonder what's going to happen going forward with that team. I don't even know if that core has much more time left, if there's a window or what's being planned, but that it's going to be an interesting offseason in Chicago. See what they do. Okay, so conference semis right now. Again, it's Ducks and Oilers on one side of the bracket, and Predators and Blues on the other. Not going to give any predictions this time because I'm not sure if any of my predictions worked out in that bracket, with the exception, well, Anaheim and St. Louis, I kind of figured would advance, but the other two didn't quite see that coming. So jumping over to the East, Rangers, Canadiens, kind of another series I didn't see coming. Rangers come out on top 4-2, and that's another, Montreal's another place where they're talking about blowing up the team. There's already rumors of Carey Price possibly being traded because he's going to be entering the last year of his contract next year. And I don't know. You've tried, if you're the management of that team, you've tried everything else, but it wasn't that long ago. It was just over a year ago. They learned the lesson that they couldn't win without him. So why get rid of him now is what I'm puzzled at. Unless they figure that's the only way they can land their true number one center, which is the bugaboo with that team. So says the media, but the Rangers come out of that series and they're going to face the winner of the other side of the Atlantic bracket, which turned out to be the Ottawa Senators. And a little bit of a surprise. I kind of thought the Bruins would pull it out, but Ottawa came out there and they're kind of scary to me because of that stupid trap game that Guy Boucher insists on employing. But I think there's a way to beat that. I'm hoping they don't. I don't know. I don't know if you want to look past our position, which we'll get to in a minute. I don't know who I'd rather play out of those two, to be honest. I don't know how well we match up against that stupid trap. And I don't like the idea of playing the Rangers again, to be honest with you. But the thing about the Ottawa series, I liked Ottawa's overall team toughness, but as was pointed out by someone who will remain nameless, and I'll get to that later on in the show as well, their offense and defense rides on one person, and that's Erik Karlsson. And I think if you neutralize him at both ends, I think you've got this team beat. The great thing about Ottawa, and I won't spend too much more time on it, but the great thing about Ottawa, of course, is the story with Craig Anderson and how his wife has battled cancer all year. And she actually went into enemy territory and went into the TD Garden and actually cheered on her husband. And that's a woman with guts. That's a lady who supports her man no matter what, and we should all be so lucky. So they come out on top, and they go on to play the Rangers in that half, in the final of the Atlantic bracket. Over to the Metro, Pittsburgh rolled over the Blue Jackets. Again, didn't see that coming. I thought that would be a much closer series. It wasn't, not by a long shot. I don't know if they just collapsed or if that was just the regular season the Jackets had was just a mirage. I don't know. We're going to find out here in about 7 or 8 months whether or not that was the case. I don't know. I don't know. They after that long winning streak they had, they looked a little ordinary, and I think the real Jackets team might have been what showed up in the playoffs. Sergei Bobrovsky was not what he was during the regular season. So I don't know. I don't know if it was, and it could well be, well, it's not could well be. It is also the fact that Pittsburgh is that damn good. Their system is built for the playoffs. They have enough of a solid core and reserve personnel who can step in. They got this center who stepped in, Jake Guentzel, already has 5 goals in the series, and I don't know if that's sustainable, but he's certainly someone to watch out for. So it's tough. It's tough to call. And of course, there was our series against the Maple Leafs, and nobody saw, like I said, nobody saw how tough it was going to be. A lot of people, well, everybody thought it was going to be a cakewalk, and it was anything but. So to discuss that further, that for some reason now makes the Capitals underdogs in the eyes of a lot of people. Now, I know Nick Backstrom said so himself that, yeah, we're the underdogs because the Pittsburgh Penguins are the defending champs. And that's probably the most accurate portrayal of it. But I think the Canadian hockey media is overplaying. Well, they want to have it both ways. And this, yeah, I'm going to be Mr. History again. This all goes back to a certain double-mindedness that we love to have. Okay. And especially in North America, I think Canadians and Americans share the same thought process that government is the problem and is the solution. Well, I'm here to say you can't have it both ways. And I'm especially saying that to the Canadian hockey media. You can't go praising the play of the Maple Leafs and say that they're awesome. They got a bright future. They're going to dominate from years to come. They're going to be a great team. They've already got a solid core. And then turn around and say, well, the Capitals sucked. The Capitals blew it. They didn't do what they should have. Well, I'm of the mentality that, yes, the way to get there is important, but the end result is even more important, okay? And I got four words for you. Five words, actually. Washington Capitals win the series. That's what it says at the bottom line. When you go to the summary for this series, that's what it'll say right at the bottom. Doesn't say the Leafs win the series. Doesn't say the Washington Capitals won the series 4-2 but sucked while doing it. The Washington Capitals beat the Leafs but they should have beaten them this way. It doesn't say that. It says Washington Capitals or Washington wins the series or Capitals win the series 4-2. That's it. That's all it says. That's it. You don't like it, that's too bad. You can't have it both ways. You can't go praising the Leafs up one side and down the other and then say Washington sucked. It wasn't both. It was actually very even. If you look at the damn scores, every game was decided by one goal. Should it have been that close? I don't know. Why didn't the Leafs get more credit beforehand? I don't think it was anything as far as the media on our side. And in fact, our media was beginning to panic. Soon as it was down 2-1. Yeah, I was one of those people that was pissed off at the team too. Trust me. Okay. But I didn't give up. I didn't say, oh no, here we go again. Why aren't we getting the bounces? Why is all this goofy crap happening? Why aren't we getting the breaks? No. It's a 7-game series. The playoffs are built to be geared towards the team that gives the greatest effort winning and gaining the outcome. That's what it's built to be. If you don't show up, you don't give your maximum effort, you don't lay it out on the line, then you won't win. And didn't I say last show, look, I'm going to gloat as much as I can within reason, okay? Did I not say last episode that it was indeed possible to win 3 straight after going down 2-1 because it's happened before and it can be done and it's not insurmountable? Well, guess what? That's what the Capitals did. Yes, they fell into the 2-1 hole, right? Fine. But they won 3 straight. Okay? You want to continue to be down on the Caps' effort? That's fine. I get that, yes. The Maple Leafs made them look a little slow at times. And they dominated the play at times. But not for the whole run of the series. It was a lot closer than the Canadian media is making it out to be. Now let me pause for a moment and make reference here to the wrap-up article by one Mr. Ed Frankovic, written in response to the end result of the series. In his notes, at the end of the article, he says final shot attempts were 70-67 for Washington. I repeat, 70-67 in Game 6 alone, shot attempts. 70 for Washington, 67 for the Leafs. 67 for the Leafs. Let me say that again. 67 for the Leafs. That's the last time you punks won a cup. Write that down. Look, I give your team all the credit in the world, but your writers are a-holes. And that's why I'm shooting back. Ovechkin alone, according to Ed's notes, had 12 shot attempts by himself. 7 made it to the net. And I want to say something else here. You people, you know who you are within the Caps fan base, who were crying and moaning and bitching that Barry Trotz was being thoroughly outcoached by the most expensive coach on the planet, Mike Babcock. All right? No, he wasn't. It may have looked that way for the first 3 games. But who made the adjustment? Who tweaked the lines? Who made sure that Ovechkin got his 20 plus minutes when it counted? Who did all the tweaking? Who made sure that the lines were matched when they needed to be? And who made sure Marcus Johansson was on the ice when he needed to be? Most importantly. All right. I don't want to hear Barry Trotz was outcoached. He wasn't. Again, people, who won the series? Who won the match? Who won the game? Who's advancing? Look at Game 6 alone. Did the Toronto Maple Leafs get anything into the net other than that something that was as a result of a fluky bounce off of the glass and the boards? Did they convert anything after that? Did they put anything away? Did they put the team away? Did they dictate the pace? Did they bury the team? Were they the superior team when they went up? Did they grab a hold of the game? I don't care that they were not supposed to, okay? You can't praise this team up one side and down the other and turn around and say the Caps sucked. You have to give the Caps their due as well. You have to. They won the last 3 games of this series. They put it away when it counted. They dominated for the rest of the game. Read Ed Frankovic's article. It's all there, black and white, clear as crystal. You can't steal the fizzy lifting drinks and get away with it. Okay? Washington outplayed Toronto for the rest of the game right after that fluke of a goal that never should have been scored in the first place. It's true. And the fact that this makes the Capitals somehow an underdog, bring it on. I like that. I like it. It suits, I don't know about you, I can't speak for all of Caps fandom, but it suits me just fine. Because the last time the Capitals were an underdog, they beat the defending champs in 7 games. And that was the Boston Bruins, 2012. Aha. Got you thinking now. Well, this team has the tools and the talent to dethrone another set of defending champions. Now, that said, ladies and gentlemen, if you all think this is going to be an easy task, if you thought Toronto was going to be easy, another thing coming. This is, without doubt, going to be the truest test of the Caps' resolve. there will be many, many moments where there will be things that will happen. I guarantee it. There will be many things that will happen in this series that will question and test the Caps' resolve, that will force the team to look inside and find the answer. I guarantee it. It will happen. This will not be easy. Not by any stretch. And this thing, I can't foresee this thing going less than 6 games. It will at least go 6. I will be very surprised if it doesn't go 7. But it will be what the Columbus series was supposed to be. It will be a knockdown, drag-out, classic Donnybrook that will sap the strength and resolve and beyond for both teams. But for that reason, I say the winner of this series will definitely go on and win the Stanley Cup, whoever it may be. And of course, we're hoping it's the guys in red, white, and blue. But I say that both teams are playing at indeed a high enough level that whoever comes out of this will take the cup eventually. That and the sheer numbers say that as well. You look at the rankings out west. There's nobody that's from 1 to 8. The highest seed team I think that's left is St. Louis. Not even them. It's either them or Anaheim. I can't think. Well, okay. So put it this. Well, all right. Chicago, the division winner, they're out. Yeah, the only division winner other than us that's remaining is Anaheim. In the West, is now wide open. Wide the hell open. So, yeah, and that's more proof in the pudding that if it's going to happen, it's got to be this year. The door is closing and yet staying wide open at the same time. This has got to be the year that they jump through it. Now, I mentioned a certain hockey writer who shall continue to remain nameless until the deed is done, and he will be at the top of my list. But more on that as we progress, and that's all I'll say about that. What I want to do now is go over the Caps roster, and this is going to be from alphabetical order of all the guys that played in the series. And fortunately or unfortunately, we have to start with Carl Alsner. One word to describe everything as far as his situation: unfortunate. If you're not 100% Iron Man streak or no, you can't play. And he didn't play. And I'm kind of kicking myself for this, but you know what? Might have been for the good, for all we know. So we'll see as that develops, but yeah. Next, of course, Nicklas Backstrom, the soul of stability for this team. Consistent effort, always knew how to sustain, start and sustain offensive, the offensive game, and was good enough in his own end. Definitely one of the MVPs for the team as this series went on. Next, Jay Beagle. Solid, at least playing-wise, would have liked to have seen more of a better result at the face-off dot. Now, I've never been a big believer that the face-offs are the end-all, be-all statistic like some groups, some certain people would have you make it out to be. But again, there were a few critical draws he should have and could have won, but didn't. He's one of a few guys where we need to see him return to the Jay Beagle that we saw during the regular season. Andrei Burakovsky, little more of the same. He seemed a little weak on the puck at times. He had flashes of brilliance. He was very, very good when he was driving to the net, making himself open. putting out a pass, maybe a little bit guilty of the overpass every now and then, passing when he should have shot, but hopefully he improves. Next, John Carlson. He got better, fortunately, as the series went on. He was paired with Nate Schmidt to give some go to the offense, and I think that is where his game is most advantageous. He looked a little weak on the defensive side at times. Need some stick'em or something because he kept dropping his stick a lot. I know it's a little unfair, but if his defensive game improves a little bit, I think that might be enough of a difference against Pittsburgh. Brett Connolly didn't get a whole lot of ice time. He's going to be on an energy line. Again, he's one of those guys like Beagle. That whole line, actually, like Beagle, like to see more of what he did during the regular season. Like to see him go to the net more, create havoc, create chances, and that was where he was at his best. So like to see him do that in this upcoming series. Next, Lars Eller. Can't say enough good things about the guy. Yes, he took that bad penalty, two bad penalties, actually, but other than that, he looked very solid, very tough, provided the toughness and overall solid play that we were looking for on the third line. So that all evens out. Just as long as he plays the solid mistake-free hockey and keeps up with what will be a relentless Pittsburgh attack, I think he'll be fine. Braden Holtby, again, a lot of guys that started off the series weak, didn't find their game until they needed to, and then kicked it up at a high level. Didn't get rattled when that fluky goal was scored on him in game 6, remained solid, blocked everything he saw, blocked things he didn't see, and proved why he's once again a finalist. Marcus Johansson, well, I'm going to skip him till the end for certain reasons. Evgeny Kuznetsov, again, another guy I thought looked a little lost at the beginning of the series. Had good flashes of performance and fits and starts. He looked very good when he was stick handling in the offensive zone. Didn't look good on the back check. Like to see that improve. Matt Niskanen, a little bit down on him. Don't like the fact that if he's got the puck behind the net on a penalty kill, he tends to do this move where the puck just looks like a wounded duck floating towards the blue line, and more often than not, the other team intercepts it. He's got to work on that, and he's got to also work on his overall defensive zone coverage. He wasn't horrible, but he's got to step it up a bit. He was paired with Dmitry Orlov as the number one shutdown pair, and at times they were effective, and then on other times they were very ordinary. So I don't know. I don't know if ordinary fits and starts of ordinary is going to be good enough against Pittsburgh. Of course it's not. So good and bad. Good things, bad things. Just, again, need to step it up. Just Dmitry Orlov, I just mentioned, surprisingly good. He was the one D-man who was able, I would think, step for step, stride for stride, I think he was the one D-man able to keep up with the movement, with the flow that was the Leafs offense. And for the most part, made fairly good decisions with the puck, which is always a good thing. He's got to keep that up. Brooks Orpik, did not look, He's starting to show his age. He's looked very slow, unfortunately, and his value shows when he's clearing bodies in front of the net, but his weakness is clearly exposed during the transition game, and unfortunately, that's where Pittsburgh tends to thrive, so it's going to be interesting how often he gets played during this series. Next, TJ Oshie. What can you say? The guy continues to have a stellar year. He is not only the guy who puts the right shots on net, he's one of the guys that keeps the offense going, that makes the top line go. When, you know, everybody's keying on Ovechkin, but they're forgetting about Oshie. and what he can do. Speaking of Ovechkin, I think this series, and of course none of the Canadian media is making anything of it. You notice they're conveniently not saying a word of it, but what kind of a guy, you know, he takes that dirty hit, okay, which I'm sorry, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on it, all right? It is what it is. The league didn't do anything about it, but he came back. Now, if he were injured, I'd be interested to see what their response would be, but neither here nor there, end of discussion. But anyway, he comes back from that dirty hit, plays his game, continues to be a force, continues to contribute to the offense, and continues to provide leadership, which has been the knock on him forever. Okay? So this time he's leadership, not only by yelling and screaming on the bench, but by example, by coming back into the game. And if he's in pain, he ain't showing it. Either that, or Greg Smith is Mr. Miyagi or Jackie Chan in The Karate Kid. Or, I don't know, or maybe Smitty went to Hogwarts. I don't know. Either way, he's got the magic touch. Moving on. Okay, so we got Schmitty up next. Nate Schmidt. Look, I'll admit I was wrong. I was skeptical about him. I'm still a tad skeptical about him. But the guy showed why he belongs. He was the driver of the offense from the back end, along with John Carlson. He fueled the transition game that was vital to keeping up with the Leafs in this series. And he was in on a lot of plays. And if he can keep that going, I think he will be the X factor as far as what Pittsburgh is going to try to expect out of the offense that is the Capitals. And so I will give him his due. But I will add this caveat. He better learn from the mistakes he made last year. Because if he didn't, then he's right back where he was. Offense or no. Next up, Kevin Shattenkirk. Okay, and a lot has been made about him, and unfortunately I have to add to that. I have to say I was not overly impressed by him during this series. I don't think he didn't look like the guy who was driving the play, was driving the transition game. As I said, that was more Carlson and Schmidt doing that. Okay, everything Schmidt did, Shattenkirk should have been doing. And even on the power play, which is why we got the guy in the first place, he looked very ordinary, and he just looked like he was trying to, I don't know what he was trying to do. He was trying to shoot. He was trying to pass, and nothing he did worked. I don't know. I don't understand what's wrong. And it's really beginning to look like we got the guy so that nobody else could have him. I don't know, but he wasn't very impressive during the series. He's very ordinary. And I think in order to beat the Penguins again, here's another guy we have to, he has to be who he was during the regular season. Okay, so after him, Justin Williams. What can you say about a guy who wins you a game and doesn't flinch when the going gets tough? Everything he's doing right now, you gotta hope that he does it more, that he continues to do it in this series, because we're gonna need it. They're gonna need it for sure, and in spades. And I think that's all you can say about him. He doesn't panic, he doesn't get down, he doesn't get nervous, he just plays his game, puts his nose in front of the net, and knows how to win, knows how to score. We need more of that from him. Next up, Tom Wilson, probably the most pleasant surprise of the series. 3 goals in 6 games, definitely pushed the pace when he had to, was a physical presence when he had to be, but did not step over the line and cause undue penalties, create undue penalties and penalty kills when when he had to or didn't have to. I'm hoping that it was more than just the adrenaline of playing in his hometown. I'm hoping he continues that. He really, really gets up and continues this game against the Penguins, but we'll see. If he does, it could be yet another X factor that the Penguins may not be able to handle. And last but not least, Daniel Winnick. I won't say he was ordinary, but again, like Connolly, he didn't get a whole lot of time. But when he was there, you know, he did what he was supposed to do. He was very responsible in his own end, didn't hurt the team, kept the play going when he had to. So very, very fourth line, but he's not, you know, we're not going to expect a whole lot out of him. Be nice if he could chip in the odd goal, but definitely not someone that's going to hurt the team. And that is it, except for Mr. Marcus Johansson. I will save the best for last indeed. MJ90 is the hero of the series. He scored both goals in game two. And again, I will take this opportunity to gloat a little bit, but ladies and gentlemen, I told you so. Okay, when this guy goes to the net, when this guy is circling around the net, when he puts his nose in front of the net and waits the puck, when he goes into the corner and digs it out and keeps the play going, when he makes that outlet pass from the boards that he does all too often, like he did to help create the winning goal in Game 5, if I'm not mistaken, yes, he was the one who initiated that play by retrieving the puck at the goal line and then feeding Kuznetsov, who found Williams in front of the net, game over, 3-2 series lead, and you know what happened after that. Okay, so again, I told you so. When Marcus Johansson goes to the net, goes into the corners, goes into the boards, good things happen. And I'm hoping that this is not the only time we see him do that. Because in years past, we'd see him in flashes here and there. So what we need from him is more consistency. Maybe he doesn't always get this kind of a result, but as long as he continues this kind of an effort, the Caps will always, always, always be in it. Now, I've been asked by a friend to make a little bit more, if I could, out of the Schmidt versus Alzner debate. And so I will. And like I said, I kind of hate to admit it, but I don't think the results would have been quite the same had Alzner been healthy and been able to stay in and Schmidt not be able to go in. And Schmidt showed his own toughness by taking a dirty hit towards the end of the game, or who was it, Komarov? And then coming back. Again, I Greg Smith, I don't know. I think he's got a private practice, so after this, he won't be hurting for clients, I don't think. That's another story. I gotta give him his due. I've gotta give Nate Schmidt his due. He was one of the drivers of the offense and one of the guys that was able to force the Leafs into a transition game they might not have been able to handle. I didn't think they saw him coming, and the fact that maybe not a whole lot of people know a lot about him is advantageous. It's a convenient little X factor. And it could be that he is a John Carlson in waiting. He could be that rare gem that can play both ends of the ice and is mobile and can move the puck and can make sure he marks his assignments. You know, who knows? And it just seems like the best thing is that maybe the fact that the more he plays, the better he gets. So again, we might well have just found that last piece, that gem, that diamond in the rough, that makes the defense complete. And I tell you what, as a result of what happened during the series, I wouldn't even be opposed to him getting more minutes than Shattenkirk. I wouldn't be opposed to playing him on the power play and or the penalty kill. Play the hell out of him at this point. Yeah, I'm on board. Now, I love Carl Alsner. I don't think his time is at an end. I would love to see him stay with the Caps. I think he's still a solid top 4D. But unless the guy is absolutely 100%, and I'm not even sure if you play him then, keep things as they are. Don't tweak the lineup. So that's going to be my take on that. Make of that what you will. I don't see... Check here. I look to have gotten a hit on Twitter. Nope, nothing more. Yeah, it seems like most of the folks on our side were interested on my take on the Schmidt versus Alsner debate, and there you have it. Now, I like Alsner, but let the guy give him some time to heal up, and I think you just leave things as they are for the time being. And the way the playoffs tend to go, we may well see him again the longer this thing goes. But I don't see a reason to change things up at all. So I think I'm just going to leave it at that. Oh, I had somebody contact me before. How come I'm not doing as much in the way of historical segments? Well, two things. Number one, I want the focus to be on the Caps as much as possible. And again, this is a Washington Capitals podcast, first and foremost and predominantly, always will be, even though I love the history of hockey. And second, well, let's face it. While I love history, history hasn't been too kind to the Capitals. And as I said in the show before we were going into the playoffs, this is a new day. This is a new year. This is a new time. And a lot of folks are going into this thing thinking that this will be a repeat of 2016. Well, you know what? Let them think that. I, for one, like the way they look. I've been told by more than a few of my friends that the adversity, the will over skill that they did indeed display in the last three games of this past series will help them. The fact that they were able to overcome and maintain their posture with all of the garbage that was going on as far as bad puck luck, bad and crazy bounces, dirty hits, gross incompetence by all the officials, both on and off the ice, not to mention the indignation of an entire wing of the hockey media who was practically willing the Leafs to win, so much so that it couldn't be more obvious. Despite all of that, I understand, yes, I understand this is just the first round. But it is still an accomplishment. Winning a playoff series ain't easy, folks. For those of you who may not have known that, I'm sure I'm being sarcastic. I know a lot of you know that, if not all of you. You on the other side of the earbuds, the speakers, or whatever. However you're listening, O ye few but faithful. So, I just wanted to point that out, and I'm not... Look, I'm not... You saw how my predictions went. They all, pretty much all of them went up in smoke. So I'm not going to give a prediction to this one. I will say, however, I feel good about this team and their chances at coming out of this and moving on to the conference final. And it just feels like this is the year. So... Game one is this coming Thursday night, and I know I'll be watching. I hope you will be too. Only one more thing to say. Let's go, Caps.